Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening and welcome to the Veterans News Hour for August the 7th, 2017. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David, how are you? And good evening to our listeners out there. Before we bring on our special guest tonight, I would like to thank the sponsors of tonight's show, the American Legion Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles M. Newman of Florida, and, of course, Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans in disability cases and military personnel actions. Back to you, David.
And tonight's special guest is the Honorable Larry Hall, the Secretary of the North Carolina Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. I'll point out that this interview was conducted and recorded earlier today, August the 7th, 2017, for later broadcast on tonight's show. Because the interview was pre-recorded, our listeners will not be able to call in and ask Secretary Hall any questions. However, we hope you will enjoy the interview and enjoy hearing from Secretary Hall as he shares his knowledge and insights on many veteran issues. So let's go to that interview now. Welcome to a special segment of the Veterans News Hour, a nationwide news and talk show on military veterans issues on BBSRadio.com Station 1. Our special guest today to discuss veteran issues is the Honorable Larry Hall, the Secretary of the North Carolina Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. It is our privilege to have Secretary Hall on our show. For those listening to this show, I'll point out that this interview is being conducted and recorded early afternoon on August 7th, 2017, for a later broadcast. This show should be of interest not only to those who live in North Carolina, but also veterans and family members who live in other states who want to learn about North Carolina experience for use in their own states. First, though, I will begin with an introduction of Secretary Larry Hall. At the start of 2017, Larry D. Hall was appointed by the Governor of North Carolina to serve as the Secretary for the North Carolina Department of Military Veterans Affairs. Prior to that appointment, Secretary Hall represented Durham County, North Carolina's 29th District and the State House of Representatives since 2006. And he led House Democrats from 2012 through 2016. Secretary Hall earned a bachelor's degree with honors in political science and business from Johnson C. Smith University and a Juris Doctor degree from the School of Law at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Upon undergrad graduation, he was commissioned as an officer in the United States Marine Corps. Secretary Hall served 16 years the United States Marines and Marine Corps Reserves, and served in the support of operations in the Middle East, in Lebanon, and Iran. He served as a rifle platoon commander, weapons company executive officer, training officer, battalion area security officer, staff judge advocate, communication security officer, and logistics officer. Secretary Hall also served as a legal officer and was formerly commandant for the Marine Corps League Detachment, which assists Marines transitioning from active duty to civilian life in locating employment, housing, and educational opportunities for their families. Secretary Hall's other service to his nation, state, and community has been very extensive. He has served as an executive committee member and economic committee chairman of the Durham branch of the NAACP, as secretary and chairman of the Durham Business and Professional Chain, and served on the Durham Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. He has also served as executive officer of the Young Marines Program, board chairman of the Durham Companions Mentor Program, and as an instructor and training officer teaching youth leadership, discipline, custom courtesies, and traditions of the Marine Corps. As House Democratic leader, Secretary Hall served on the state's Economic Development Board, the state's Innovation Council, the North Carolina Courts Commission as chairman, the Duke Medical Center Advisory Board, the Homeland Security, Military, and Veterans Affairs Committee as chairman, and he has been inducted as a Toll Fellow by the National Conference of State Governments. So without further ado, it is my distinct privilege to welcome him to our show. Sir, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm really inspired to be on with you and hope that your listening audience gets a lot from this exchange.
Yes, sir, I'm sure we will, and there's so much we can talk about, so why don't we start with talking about the mission and some of the current programs of your department.
Well, for those folks who may not be aware, most states in the United States have someone assigned to assist with military concerns in that state. In the state of North Carolina, we're especially blessed because as a result of the efforts of the American Legion, the Department of Veterans Affairs was started in North Carolina, later became part of the Department of Administration, and then was returned to a separate department status. Under that initiative, the Veterans Affairs Department and the American Legion together started North Carolina's cemeteries for North Carolina's war veterans and military veterans. Subsequent to that, they started together the North Carolina nursing homes for veterans, and then also veteran service officers at the state level to work with veteran service officers at the county level. So there are several initiatives that have been started. Most of them have been in conjunction with the American Legion. So they are veteran sensitive and veteran sponsored initiatives here in the department. We're the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs because we work on the premise of ensuring that our military bases function seamlessly with our communities around them, that we try to ensure the levels of education, quality of life, and certainly economic development around those bases, and make sure that they're a part of the community and community development strategy. On the veteran side, as I just said, we have veteran service officers throughout the state. Each county either has a veteran service officer or contracts in some way through some agreement to provide those services to the 100 counties in North Carolina. We have several VA medical centers, several VA medical clinics, and we assist veterans in obtaining their benefits, whether they be in the areas of education, home finance, or, as most people hear about, regarding Veterans Administration access to health care and treatment. So our department tries to help both the community and the individual veteran. Our idea or our premise or our motto is you have earned it and we should ensure that you get it. And so we approach it from the standpoint that every veteran who has credibly served should receive all of his or her benefits. And it's our duty to try to make sure that happens for the sake of the individual veteran, his family, his community, and the state of North Carolina.
I see. Well, thank you, sir, on that. I understand that, and I'm a veteran myself. I served in the Air Force, and one of my tours was at Seymour Johnson in Goldsboro. I know you had a brother that served there as well, as I understand it, there. And you come from a military family. You were in the Marine Corps, and your father was in the Army at Fort Bragg. Is that correct?
That's correct. We've developed an especial affinity for the families of military and veterans, and we have to understand that those families also sacrifice to allow their spouses or their parents or their brothers or sisters to serve, and they in many instances are called upon to make sacrifices in order to make that happen. So we can't thank the families enough and the communities enough who make that sacrifice. Certainly in my family, we had a tradition of service, and my mother and my sister certainly sacrificed to have us away from home at differing times, and the amount of moving with my father during his term of service took a toll on the family from that standpoint, and they soldiered through, so to speak. So we have to tip our caps to the families, thank them for the sacrifice they make, and once again, many of the benefits that veterans receive assist their families, and so that makes it that much more important that we ensure veterans receive access to all the care, treatment, and benefits they so richly deserve.
Yes, and I understand North Carolina has a very large presence. We've already mentioned the names of the major installations. And there's a large veteran population. I understand it's approximately 800,000 veterans live in North Carolina. And our listening audience for this show, a nationwide show, has many veterans that I'm sure at one point or another served at North Carolina bases. How would you say that large DOD presence in North Carolina and the large veteran population, how does it affect North Carolina and vice versa? You know, how, and I know as a leader in the state legislature, you were involved in a lot of different programs, economic development, healthcare issues, homeland security. How would you say that each of the relationship between DOD and the state and the military families, how would you describe that? What can we take away from that?
Well, the first thing we like to do is orient everyone to understand the interdependency between the, quote, civilian population and the military population. As you said, in North Carolina, we have a large military population, and between federal contracting jobs and defense-related jobs and active duty, you're talking about some 600,000 people who are employed by the industry. We have the third highest military active duty population in the United States here stateside. The largest Army base that constitutes approximately 10% of the Army and their assets, and the largest Marine base constituting approximately 45% with operational units of the Marine Corps' strength. And so big population in the state, a state that a lot of people look to see how the military is embraced and how the military performs in accommodating the units and the different training organizations that come through here. It's important that we say the military is a part of the community, not apart from the community. And it can be seen so much in the comments of the commanders of our military installations when, to a man, when questioned about the most important issues facing their bases and their personnel, their number one concern is education. The education of the young families, of the children, of the development of the young enlisted who will later become leaders in our services. And so that once again says the same issue that concerns our civilian population certainly concerns our military population. And everything else from quality of life to the transportation and road system affects our troops because their families, again, in many instances, accompany them and live in those communities. So we have to understand that interdependency and the fact that what we do with these bases affects our economy to the tune of $66 billion a year, the second highest industry driver in the state, agriculture being number one. But I think it's also important when you talk about the military and what they do, they are economic drivers. The bases themselves are hubs of activity, of technology, of human capital with these well-trained military personnel and certainly their families. So we have to understand in North Carolina, we have five major bases east of 95, of Highway 95 that parallels the coast, Interstate 95. And they, along with our university system campuses east of 95, are the primary economic drivers and economic engines in that part of the state. So while tourism is something that's important to the state, the real backbone of the state of North Carolina on that 95 corridor and east to the coast is the military.
I see. And I understand that your department has an initiative. You're trying to double the number of veteran-owned businesses in North Carolina. You're working on some federal partnerships to accomplish that. Can you tell us more about kind of the background and the goals about that program?
Yes. First of all, there are several initiatives we have and several partnerships we have, and we want to double the number of military-owned operated businesses and increase substantially the number of employed military. Approximately 15 years ago, the then acting, the then governor, Beverly Perdue, started a military advisor position within the governor's office. And that position set up a commission to help us identify issues that would keep our bases strong in North Carolina and add additional units and improve our positioning during rounds of the Base Realignment and Closure Act. As you may have heard of that, people call it the BRAC, but at any rate, it reevaluates our military bases and their functionality. After Governor Perdue started that, and we were successful in representing North Carolina in that round of BRAC, the legislature 2 years ago decided to form this department. Regarding businesses, strengthening the business defense business complex around our bases has been an objective based in economic development. We understand that we take young men and women from all over the United States and its territories and provide them world-class training in science and technology, in robotics, and in aeronautics, and many other fields. And what Governor Perdue 15 years ago, and now we continue on with the idea that we should harness that intellectual capital and try to ensure that they are able to live and work in North Carolina and contribute to North Carolina-based businesses. And that is part of the initiative that we carry on today. We have a... We have a specific program now from the Office of Economic Assistance from the Department of Defense that we are doing in North Carolina, Defense Diversification Initiative. And it is an initiative to map all of the defense industry participants in North Carolina, first of all, to select a core group of them after we have identified them and provide them with specific economic and technical assistance to ensure that they both grow and improve and then use those lessons learned to create a wider program. So what we want to do, again, is identify who is actually participating in the defense industry in North Carolina, number one. Number two, what are their Department of Defense connections, and what other contracts or services do they provide to other consumers or other businesses? We want to find out what is the best optimal business model for them so they can grow and employ even more of our military coming off of active duty and grow the economic communities around those bases, as well as in other areas of our state. You know, it may be unknown that the third highest military population we have in the state is in the Charlotte, North Carolina area. People may be familiar with the Charlotte, Carolina Panthers, who are located in Charlotte, or the Charlotte now Hornets. They have gotten their name back, professional basketball team. But because of the size of the city, it inherently has the third highest veteran population. The next highest veterans populations in our state are around Camp Lejeune, the home of the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force in Jacksonville, North Carolina, and the 82nd Airborne Division, 18th Airborne Corps, that is located at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, which is near Fayetteville, North Carolina. So our state is kind of a leader in a lot of different ways, and we like that, but we also have to be effective at what we're doing to preserve our military traditions and our positioning as America's force.
Right. Now, I appreciate that, sir, and I understand that your department, as the name of the department, it has military as well as veteran issues. Many other states, by comparison, will just have a Department of Veteran Affairs, and it sounds like your department has a special focus also on the military side, which would mean the active duty bases and promoting stability, avoiding the base closures and economic development, promotion, those sorts of things. As far as veterans out there who may just be leaving active duty and transitioning into civilian life, looking for employment, what sorts of things should they be looking for in North Carolina, and maybe specifically from your department?
Well, as I said, our department collaborates with a lot of partners to try to achieve the objectives you just talked about, one of them being employment for military. And so we've engaged partners such as Microsoft and MetLife and others who are specifically trying to recruit military-trained personnel. We call them, and I've borrowed this term, so it's by no means my origination or my original thought, but we call veterans in the military culture carriers because they carry that culture of determination and dedication, of obedience to leadership, and those type things into the workplace. So one of the programs we have is called North Carolina for Military Employment, or NC4Me. And it is a program that's designed to work with major businesses and employers to get them to commit to hiring for their companies, where possible, veterans with experience and knowledge that can help move their companies forward. Even companies such as AT&T and Duke Power are also partners in that effort. So that is one of the ways we do it. We have another initiative with the North Carolina Department of Economic Development, and it is one wherein it's called NC Works, where it allows veterans to go on the website and search for jobs and opportunities throughout participating industry in North Carolina. And, of course, there are many other. We have veteran service officers in, as I said, covering the 100 counties of the state. And those veteran service officers oftentimes help on a local basis to get our veterans into training and apprentice programs, as well as programs through our community college that will partner with businesses that locate in their areas. So we're trying to approach it on all fronts. We're trying to skill up or increase the skill level of veterans even when they leave the service, trying to ensure we match them with businesses and industry that we recruit to North Carolina, as well as those who are already here.
Well, those sound like great programs. One of our guests on our show a few weeks ago was a gentleman that that is in Durham, North Carolina, and his name's Theodore Stevens. He's the CEO of a private charitable group called Veterans Helping Veterans of America. And I know there's so many private veteran groups out there, and part of what he said was the importance of helping these veterans get jobs, help them build a resume, and those sorts of things. Would your organization welcome or seek the support of those veteran groups? I know you mentioned American Legion earlier in the show, but to what extent do you see a role for these private veteran groups getting involved and perhaps aiding your department in its mission?
And we did mention the American Legion, and we didn't mean to slight anyone by mentioning them. They are so intertwined in the history of this department in the state of North Carolina, and they do great work nationally, so we do have to recognize them. But also Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Marine Corps League, the Association of the Army, the Order of the Purple Heart, and the list goes on and on at local statewide organizations that help. We always encourage people to do an initial search, if possible, to find out who is already carrying out the mission or the effort you want to participate in. See if that organization can be improved so that you don't have to spend too much of your time building an organization. If possible, we'd love for you to be able to step in, assist, and immediately have impact on the issues that you're concerned about. And those instances where that's not available in your community, then certainly organizations will spring up, or if it's determined that other organizations are not responsive enough. So we welcome anyone and everyone. We believe in the holistic approach of putting these organizations together, playing to their strengths, and letting them do what they do best and try to have someone else do what they do best. No one organization fits every situation. So we're hopeful that Mr. Stevens' organization and any others will plug into the network of veterans organizations that we have. we have something called the Veterans Affairs Commission, and it is a commission that brings together those leaders from those different state organizations to talk and act on issues, advocate for legislation and programs, and to inform the veteran populace about them. So the mission is continuous. The efforts are continuous. Lots of folks want to help veterans, and we certainly want to help them be as effective as they can to help the almost 1 million veterans we believe we have in North Carolina. You know, that's almost one-tenth of our population. So how veterans go, so goes the state.
Right, right. And veteran benefits and access to health care have been two big issues in the national media spotlight in the last few years. You know, going back to about 2014, when General Shinseki was the Secretary of the VA, and he was forced out because of the health care scandal. You know, it started with Phoenix. They had the veterans waiting for a long time to get health care, and then finding out that the VA had been keeping false numbers on the waiting time and all that sort of thing. There's what are your, and then on the benefit side, the fact that the disability compensation program, I think everyone agrees that it's pretty broken. It takes years for cases on appeals. Congress in Washington has been working on legislation on those issues. Do you have any thoughts from the perspective where you're at in North Carolina about those issues, veteran benefits, access to health care, any thoughts, any programs, initiatives in those regards?
Well, you hit it on the head. As I said at the start, our veterans have many benefits that should be afforded to them that for one reason or another they're unable to access. Our veteran service officers throughout the state, as well as the county veteran service officers and the veteran service techs, are trained to assist our veterans in accessing and filing appeals in and working their way through that system. So veterans that we assist invariably have a shorter period of time between applying and receiving their benefits than veterans who do not have the technical assistance we can provide. So we encourage them to reach out. Our veteran service officers and our veteran service techs are paid for with their tax dollars. So they've already paid for this assistance, and we want them to use it wherever possible. The issue of medical care and access, as you may know, and you've probably heard nationwide, that we're about 40,000 medical professionals short in the VA system, meaning there are about 40,000 positions that deliver medical services within the Veterans Administration system that are unfilled. I can't emphasize to you enough what kind of impact that has in slowing the delivery of services, because if you don't have a medical professional to deliver the services at the end of that pipeline, then you will not be served. They'll have to stack up the appointments. They'll have to delay. They'll have to reschedule and all those other things that delay treatment. So it's important that we understand that and that we nationally make a commitment not only to talk about that issue, but to address that shortage of medical professionals. The question of disabilities that many veterans suffer, again, that ability to appeal when your disability is denied is something our veteran service officers can assist with, especially getting veterans in front of claims officers from the VA. And we have veterans benefit assistance conferences throughout the state where we bring representatives from the VA to sit down at different gathering sites and bring the veterans themselves forward to sit right in front of that VA administrator to make a determination on the spot. So that model has cut out a lot of the time in between claims being filed and service being received. But it is all dependent upon having people of goodwill who are dedicated and willing to make that effort. So we can't not talk about the fact that this system is representative of the people who serve in it, and we all have a part to play and can do more and do better and should. So we should be suspect and review the efforts of every level of this system, but we should also provide the benefits and provide the staffing necessary at every level So whether it's the county level to ensure they have veteran service officers, whether it's the state level to ensure they have a military and veterans affairs department, whether it gets to the national level of the VA, and the same thing for healthcare availability, we should do those things at every level, and it will improve the whole system.
I see. Now, Secretary Hall, you mentioned before the shortage that the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs has as far as employees, something in the order of 40,000, and most on the healthcare side. And I'm sure it affects North Carolina veterans as it does veterans throughout the country. And I realize this is most would agree there's a shortage of doctors and nurses and other healthcare providers in the private sector as well. Do you see this as, you know, when I was in the Air Force, we used to call problems and challenges, we used to call them opportunities to excel. Do you see this as an opportunity to excel for perhaps your department or other departments at the state level to look into programs to perhaps pay for individuals to go to nursing school or to medical school, similar to what the military already has? They do have programs, you know, where they will fund education for some to go to medical school, even law school and other specifics. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I do want to comment on that idea that you just talked about, which is paying for someone's education and professional training in exchange for committed years of service, and that is something that is happening. And I will give you an example. One of the programs here in North Carolina is one where we have a shortage of nurses, and as you said, shortage of nurses on the private side as well as in the VA system and the national healthcare system. And as a result, those folks who are in those programs can have their degree paid for if they will commit to working for area medical centers. And so around the schools that have schools of nursing here in North Carolina, those programs have taken off. And so the military, as you said, may have to get into that business regarding nurses and other healthcare professionals. They already do it for the legal professions. Our shortage, as you said, this system-wide, is one that we can address in a lot of different ways, but we have to be effective at the end of the day. We have additional technology now that helps make it more accessible. We have some what they call black box technology that allows diagnostics to be done because of Skype and because of other face-to-face electronic interfaces that allow doctors to see and examine as best possible patients who are at the other end of some technology device. And so there's a program that is going through Congress now where they're titling it, I believe, anywhere to anywhere is what the phraseology is used to describe the program. And the new VA director is certainly pushing use of technology where possible to speed up treatment and access. So those are some things we can do going forward that have been tried. Technology is advancing. And, of course, we're going to have to learn how to use it better and get all of the benefit out of it that we can.
Right. There's so many different opportunities and a lot of great ideas as you've just explained. One thing I'd like to touch on, and this was something we discussed on our show previously. We had a gentleman from a private organization called Civilian Exposure talking about the past contamination between 1953 and 1987. At Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, the drinking water, where there was contamination both from the work that the Marine Corps was doing, but also some off installation. There was a dry cleaner in particular that's now out of business. So the VA recently, just earlier this year, finally came up with a list of 8 disabilities that they will presume, if a veteran gets those and served between 53 and 87, that those were related to his or her service at Lejeune. Do you have any? I know you served at Camp Lejeune yourself. Do you have any thoughts on that issue? Is that an issue where your department is involved in any way or playing any role?
Well, again, our department is certainly involved from the standpoint of veterans who served at Camp Lejeune during that period of time should contact their local veteran service officer or veteran service office and ask, do they qualify? We can secure their records for them so they can check to ensure what dates they served. Certainly, they would also need to look at what is their current medical status because, as you said, there have been eight conditions that have been documented as being acceptable in the program to receive compensation for. But there could be other conditions that additional information would make available so that people can get treated. The act that got signed into law by President Obama in 2012, the Janie Ensminger Act, is one, and I met Sergeant Ensminger, is one that was an act that allowed what you talked about to happen, which is it allowed claims to be filed and the study to be done and the diseases designated that would be compensated for those who have been stationed at Camp Lejeune. It's a, you know, that is a story that's one of the darker days in the history of the Marine Corps from the standpoint of failure to properly process those complaints during that period of time and thereby possibly take action that would have prevented other people from being subjected to these chemicals and the damage it has done to people's lives. And so that responsibility lies in the hands of the American people and our Congress and our federal government to compensate these families who took the risk, as I said at the start of your show, who took the risk, who supported their loved ones, who stayed behind and provided safe haven for the families, and as a result, they suffered potential contamination and poisoning at the hands of that water system. So we have to stand up and take further responsibility for that. It's fine that they've identified eight potential diseases that may have resulted and would be compensated, but any disease for any Marine or his family or anyone who was stationed there during that period of time should be compensated if it's found to be related to that water system.
Oh, yes, sir, I agree. And you mentioned the 2012 law that President Obama signed about that, and I would add that that what's interesting is that law, which was a law passed by Congress, listed 15 different conditions that enabled veterans and their family members to receive health care from the VA or reimbursement for out-of-pocket expenses. But what's curious is that at the early parts of 2017, when the VA issued its regulations for compensation presumption, that list of 15 got narrowed down to 8. But I completely agree with you. Veterans that have gotten sick and they have, you know, any reason to think that it's connected should put in a claim, and it's something that is... system-wide, it's Camp Lejeune has received the most attention, but there's many installations around the country in a similar situation.
I just want to put one statement in here because as I said, Sergeant Jerry Ensminger was the father of the daughter who the act was named after, Janie Ensminger. But as I said before, we're part of the community, not apart from the community, and here is where it connects again. The dry cleaners throughout our country used the same disposal methods and poisoned municipal water supplies as well. And so I know when I was in the state legislature, we had a cleanup fund for many of the dry cleaning sites in the state of North Carolina. And so this happened at Camp Lejeune. It was a terrible situation because it was noticed and reported several times, not investigated. And as you've indicated now, the intended number of diseases has been cut from 15 to 8 right now, but may be expandable. But it is important to recognize this same conduct was an industry practice that poisoned municipal water throughout the United States. And people should look out for that issue in their community. Again, we're part of the community, not apart from the community. So what happens to veterans happens to all of us in many different ways.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's a good lesson for the importance of environmental laws and regulations. When I was stationed at Seymour Johnson between 1990 and 93, I was the deputy statute advocate, and I had to wear several hats, as we all do in the military. And one of my hats was as the environmental attorney at Seymour Johnson. And at that time, the base was spending, hundreds of thousands of dollars in just the installation restoration program studies to find out the extent of contamination, because Seymour Johnson, like most bases, dated back to the 1940s, World War II era, and there were no environmental standards back then. The thought was, if it came out of the ground, pour it back in the ground. And the same thing for the civilian community. The concern that contamination from the bases is getting in the groundwater, which is contaminating the wells of the neighbors. So it is all part of, we're all on the same perspective. But, sir, a couple other points before we wrap up the show. One of my favorite quotes is, President Kennedy famously said, "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country." With that in mind, we often talk about, veterans' benefits, what are they entitled to, and I'm an advocate, I represent veterans, and I certainly get that. But from your perspective, too, something you mentioned earlier in the show, and you've been a mentor yourself, what can you challenge veterans to do to get more involved to help not only other veterans, but their communities and their states, just as you have done in your work?
That's the interesting question, that veterans in many instances serve out of a feeling of dedication to community service. And that feeling should be revived in our veterans going forward. We have really a passing of the torch to different generations now, and some of our younger veterans don't know what older veterans went through for them and the real history of it. 64 years ago, the Korean conflict was ended, and when we go back and study that war, we recognize that right after World War II, when that conflict began, the United States was not equipped, either manpower or materiel, was not equipped to fight that war. They had just come out of World War II. Their equipment stocks were down. They ended up taking equipment out of museums and storage yards and trying to get it to be functional to fight in Korea. They also had to mobilize people who thought they had served in the last great war and would not have to serve again, and as such had undermanned units as well as ill-equipped units. But the one thing they had was determination and the training and the discipline of those American soldiers and fighting men who decided to go out and execute the mission with whatever they had. And so training and teaching that history, that esprit de corps, that determination, that self-worth, that love of country is something we need our veterans to do, because they have a record to show they did it. They didn't talk about it. It wasn't just a tweet. It was action on the ground and in the air and here at home. And so that is the greatest thing our veterans can do. Engage in the public discourse, value and validate the service of other veterans at every level, and ensure you pass that on as a tradition to be proud of.
Well, that's great, and that's great words of wisdom. Our time for today's show is rapidly drawing to a close. I would like to wrap up by thanking Secretary Hall for the time he has taken to share his knowledge and his insight. And I would also ask Secretary Hall for any final additional thoughts in closing, and any other words of wisdom that he would pass on to young veterans, particularly those that are just leaving active duty and transitioning to civilian life. And then finally, where can veterans and families find out more about the North Carolina programs?
Well, I'll start with the last one first. And the reason I do that is because we publish an annual guide to update our veterans on services and benefits, where they can reach out and get assistance in everything from employment to entrepreneurship, healthcare benefits, housing assistance, education, women's services, and even active military issues. So they can go to our website. That resource guide is posted on our website, and it can be a point to start from at milvets, vets.nc.gov or nc4vets.com. That's milvets.nc.gov or nc4vets.com. Either one of those internet sites will bring you where you can access our guide for benefits for military and reserve. And we certainly hope folks will use that and take that opportunity again to access what they have already earned and paid for in service. I want to take the time, though, to thank and encourage veterans to contact their local Veterans Service Office. We are here to serve you. We work for you. And all we ask is that you give us the opportunity to give back to you and help continue to make this country great because you serve and you gave of yourself and your family. It is a disservice if they don't contact us because they will not be able to replace and repay fully their families and their community for the service that they have given in support of them. So we would just say, let us serve you. Let us be your partners in getting your benefits and helping your family.
Well, thank you, sir. It's been our great privilege to have Secretary Larry D. Hall, the Secretary of the North Carolina Department of Veterans and Military Affairs, on our show today. Sir, thank you for being on our show, and we wish you great success in the future in all your endeavors. Thank you very much.
Well, my pleasure, and Semper Fi.
Yes, sir. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed that interview that we had this afternoon with Secretary Larry Hall from North Carolina. I hope you found it as enlightening and informative as I did. And he did mention towards the end a couple websites, which I'll repeat for those of you that may just be grabbing your pen and paper. These are two excellent resources for those in North Carolina. But if you're not in North Carolina, check these out as well because you might be able to find something that's useful and applicable in your state, wherever you are. Those two websites are milvets.nc.gov. That's milvets.nc.gov, milvets.nc.gov. And the other website that Secretary Hall mentioned is nc4vets.com. That's NC, the number 4, vets, V-E-T-S.com. So check out both those websites. A lot of good information. Richard, hope you're still with us and want to share your thoughts
David, that was real. That was good stuff. I found it very interesting. As you know, my son-in-law is stationed at Johnson Air Force Base. My daughter, and my three grandchildren are there. So I found listening to his perspective on North Carolina and very interesting. Sounds like he's doing some good work up there. But before we wrap up the program, we do need to get into our coaching into care. And as we say on this program weekly, that if you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call, toll-free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, that's Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. Along that same note, I would like to say that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Yep, thanks, Richard. Again, I hope everyone enjoyed the interview with Secretary Larry Hall from North Carolina. Just a quick summary of some events in Washington, D.C. You know, over the last 6 months, we've tried to keep all our listeners informed about what's going on in the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate about legislation. Well, this past week, in fact, the last couple weeks, very active up in Congress, and everyone that's so used to following the media where it seems like everyone's divided along political grounds. What I think is unique, and Richard, I think you'll agree with me, we've discussed this, is that it's unique that when you're talking about veteran issues, whether it's on the House of Representatives side or the Senate side, the committees are working pretty in a uniform, in a bipartisan manner in legislation and in their votes. Most of the major legislation is passing with little, if any, opposition within the committees. And this past week, a number of pieces of legislation advanced. One of the most significant ones involved the long-awaited reform of the VA disability appeal system. Again, we've talked about that at length in many of our prior shows over the last 6 months. That legislation passed the House of Representatives without any opposition back in May. A very similar but just slightly different version passed the Senate last week. So now it has to go back to the House for both houses to kind of reconcile their differences, which I expect they'll easily do, and then I expect it'll probably go on to the president, who will sign it. That legislation has received the support, certainly at the VA, which is mostly behind it, which actually gives me some grounds for concern. They've got major veteran groups signed up on board, but I don't think they're publicizing enough the fact that there are some concerns with this legislation. Personally, as we've discussed on prior shows, my legal analysis is, and this is supported by some veteran groups like Vietnam Veterans of America, Military Veterans Advocate, and some other groups that believe that this legislation to reform, so-called reform the appeal system, actually may not solve the underlying problems, which include not only just the complexity of it, but the tremendously long wait times when a case goes on appeal, taking, you know, many years, 4 or 5 years at each of multiple steps. So I'm predicting this legislation. Go ahead. Go ahead, Richard.
If I can add, David, on that same note, you and I talked about this earlier today, you know, my other concern is that with everything that's been going on in D.C. with Trump and all the mess that's going on up there, I'm concerned that our congressmen, our senators, and that they're not really reading this legislation, that they have aides that are just putting this out there and saying, look, it's good stuff, it's supporting veterans, just, you know, vote for it, you know, you can't go wrong. Whereas if they were to oppose it, then I think the backlash, if they're up for re-election in 2018, could have an effect on whether or not they are sent back to D.C. So I'm concerned that, you know, it's just more politics, and we're really not getting into the nuts and bolts of what we need to do to help our vets.
Right. Well, I agree with you, and I think that in some ways veteran issues have become kind of a third rail that politicians don't want to touch. And as a result, most politicians in Washington, they're just going to follow the crowd. And once there's some consensus among those that are mostly in power, which are those in the two committees, House and Senate committees, and just the leadership, bipartisan leadership, both committees, once they're on board, it becomes inevitable. No one wants to oppose something that's going to hurt the veterans, and even though there might be some serious flaws. But time will tell. My prediction is that this legislation, yes, is drastically going to change the appeals process. Is it going to improve it? Is it going to make it faster? My prediction is no, it won't. And furthermore, and even worse, it will only make it easier for the VA to deny claims. That's my prediction. But we're about out of time for this evening. I'd like to thank you all for listening. I'd like to thank our special guest, the Honorable Larry Hall, Secretary of the North Carolina Department of Veterans and Military Affairs. I'd like to thank our producer here at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and invite listeners to become show guest sponsors and advertisers in the future. Our contact information is on our radio show's website, which is bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. where you can also find archived podcasts of our prior shows for your benefit. Please tune in next week. We will have a special guest discussing traumatic brain injury, TBI, and treatment programs for it. Our guest next week will be Mr. Fred Hinton, who now works for a project called Operation TBI Freedom, which is run by Craig Hospital in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and serving service members and veterans for all of Colorado. Even if you don't live in Colorado, you may find it a very important show because traumatic brain injury, or TBI, is a very common injury of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as a significant cause of disability outside of the military setting. So until then, please have a great week. Good night. We'll see you next week. Thanks, Richard.
Good show, David. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.